What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
Wow, Sherlyn, you really like leaned in there like a music video, so I kind of, it's a great sound. Hello, Sherlyn. Hello, audience. I felt like I was being introduced to a 90s music video. It's like, Sherlyn's ready for Sherlyn's beats. Let's drop it. This week, we've got the PlayStation Portal, folks, which I reviewed at the site, and I had a lot of fun reviewing that because it made me very, very mad. And we'll talk about that with a special guest. But as always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes. Seriously, there's a lot of reporting out there about how bad the podcasting industry is right now. And it really does all come down to iTunes. So please leave us a review. And if you have any feedback, drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. Let's talk about the PlayStation Portal. And this is a weird device, so to help us figure it out is Scott Stein, editor-at-large at CNN. Hey, Scott, how's it going?
Hey, great, Devendra. Great to join you.
Yeah, happy to have you here. I feel like we got to break down what this thing is for Sherlyn specifically, because I know, Cher, you wanna dabble in gaming, right?
I mean, I have a few handheld PC,
you have a few.
Or handheld gaming consoles, but yeah, sure. Yes.
How about a console that doesn't actually play any games? How about a console is useless when it's offline. Does that sound great to
you? That's not a game. That's not a gaming machine, right? If it doesn't play any games?
It's not a gaming machine. It is in fact a portal. And what the PlayStation Portal is, it is just a window into your PlayStation 5. That's all it is. It can stream games.
I do not have a PS5, so I guess bye.
Say bye. When you're at home, you could stream games, from your PlayStation. When you're remote and anywhere online, you can also long distance PlayStation remote stuff, but it's all your PlayStation 5. You cannot play any of the cloud-based PlayStation service games right now. First of all, does this device make sense to you, Sherlyn, as somebody who is probably, not paying full attention to this market?
Right. I know, like I said, once you said it's a portal to the PS5, I'm like, oh, well, I guess this doesn't concern me, but other handheld consoles for sure.
I know, you're playing with Ioneo. We've talked about the Steam Deck.
I also have the Lenovo Legion Go, yeah.
Yes, that's all the stuff. So, Scott, we both reviewed this thing. I did not score this thing very well because what happened was I got this device really late, and Sony was like, hey, by the way, the embargo for the review is Monday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern. And I wanted to say, F off. You sent me this thing on Friday. So I spent the weekend testing it, and I spent Monday morning writing it up. And a couple hours later, I had 2,000 words of I had a lot of feelings about this, but not very favorable. Scott, I want to know, what did you think of the PlayStation Portal overall?
Yeah, I had the same really short time frame, and I'm still a review in progress, so I haven't given it a score yet. Very up and down, and it's changed over time. I understood the idea of it thinking about the Wii U. That this was the Wii U gamepad for the PS5.
What Nintendo did 10 years ago. Sony's like, hey, that's a good idea.
Do that thing. And I've looked at things like Backbone One and, some of those streaming options. And so I understood it. And when I got to use it, my first thought was, oh, the controller really feels nice in the sense that it's like my 15-year-old son avoids these streaming handheld things because he says the controllers suck. And so I was like, okay, well, the controllers are nice. Yeah, and... Mm-hmm. He's become a controller PC aficionado, all of a sudden from under
me. Our kids are going to become just like us, and it's going to be very, very annoying.
He's talking about mouse click efficiency and stuff. And I appreciated that. But then I was the streaming quality, I was this is, I played Madden, which is my go-to. And, so for me, cool that I can play Madden because weirdly no handheld for some reason seems to be able to play Madden well and for various reasons. And so this played it, but I could tell that there was a little bit of difference in the reaction times and even the haptics. And it's goofy. Like I said in the thing, it's a goofy product in the way it looks. It's like a Batarang. It sprouts those controllers. It's not very portable.
It's $200, to be clear.
But yet I also see a weird logic in it. Am I crazy that it's $100 to buy one of those controllers for your phone. And if you're really – PS5 is – they're really selling the extra products this year hard. And to me, the PSVR 2 and the Portal are different arguments for a similar philosophy in some weird way. It's extend your PS5 and in various non-compatible ways. So in a way, this felt more practical, but also like let go all expectations of this being a Vita.
It's a weird device because when they announced this thing, we talked about it here on the show too, and I was like initially skeptical. It's like, what the hell am I going to do with a streaming-only handheld? Why is it $200? Holding it a bit, trying it a bit. Like, I agree, Scott. Like, the controls are great. It is the DualSense controller with an 8-inch tablet in the middle. And, you know, it has all the buttons except for the center trackpad, and you could just tap on the screen if you need to do any of those things. It does feel like you're holding a DualSense. It has the good haptics and everything. And it worked sometimes for me, right? Like, I played Spider-Man 2. I was playing some God of War Ragnarok. And when it worked in my home, it was magical. It was like, oh, wow, this is a really cool thing to be able to do. And then I moved like 5 feet and I lost connection to my PlayStation 5, you know, or I, for some reason, when I tried to play again in the same location, it just didn't work. Because a streaming device really comes down to, it is dependent on a chain of things. It's dependent on your internet connection. It's dependent on your PlayStation 5 saying, hey, I would like to remote play right now. And there were instances where I had to go down and reset my PlayStation because it just wouldn't connect for no reason, no reason at all. So it's one of those things where it's like, I see the logic here, but also I can't trust this device. Like, ultimately, that's my review, right? Like, I can be sitting and enjoying and playing Spider-Man for 30 minutes and then drop connection. No reason. I have great internet at home. I have a Wi-Fi 6 router. I have gigabit internet. Just stops working. And I'm sometimes like 10, 15 feet away from the router. So, like, the logic of it doesn't quite make sense. You can't really travel with this. Like, I was able to tether my phone when we went shopping for groceries one morning, and I was like, oh, okay. It took 30 seconds, but I eventually was able to connect to my PlayStation 5 and play like 10 minutes and then drop connection error. You know, you can't use this thing on an airplane because the Wi-Fi definitely is not fast enough, but also the latency would make it totally useless. You can't really make it your gaming system while traveling because you don't know how good your hotel Wi-Fi is, and you don't want to be stuck on vacation like, oh, this was the one gaming system I brought and it does not work. So the downsides really seem to outweigh everything. Sherlyn, like, yeah, what does this seem like a good sell to you for $200?
No. the two use cases you mentioned already are just like, you can't always be relying on Wi-Fi or internet availability. I think also I have a preference for like locally like downloaded games and like that sort of thing. Because they just run faster, better. I don't,
you have a preference for
activity.
Doing things with the device in your hand, right? Like that. This thing is like the cheapest thing Sony could have put out, right? Because it just streams video. That's all it's doing. It's decoding video that's coming from your PlayStation. It can't run apps locally. It can't run games locally. You can't use it to watch Netflix locally. It is a $200 brick if you have no internet, basically.
It seems useless in those scenarios. I mean, for those people who have like a palatial mansion, you live in like a multi-floor, multi-room where you have like excellent Wi-Fi throughout your mansion, and you have the, you know, you're a Kardashian, I'm guessing, you get the portal to be playing in your West Wing while your PS5 sits in your...
You would
East
just have
wing,
multiple
whatever.
PS5s. You would have a PS5.
That's
every
what
room,
I was about to
know?
Say. I was going to say, like, in that situation, why don't you have multiple PS5s? Have why multiples. Throw a $200 on, yeah. to rely on Wi-Fi anyway?
Why would you want to spend $200 on a handheld to also play games in a worse quality than the $500 system you paid for can actually produce to? Like, it seems backwards thing. Yeah.
It's probably in that situation, if you have the multiple like wings and mansions set up, and it's probably nice to have a handheld to play games on your PS5 while your TV is still showing, like, you know, TV stuff. Like, you're watching Orange is the New Black. I don't know. I threw out the title. And you're sitting back
on
your couch.
A show from 10 years ago. Yes,
game.
Yes, yes.
I know. Mm-hmm. That's the show I went to. And you want to play games, but not on your phone because your phone doesn't have a good, like, you know, controller
right,
system.
Right.
I don't know. In that case, buy a proper handheld. I don't know. Buy one you can take on the go.
It's something to keep by your chaise lounge or something in this mansion.
Right, exactly.
It's your downstairs game entertainment. It's very much like a home appliance, and I felt that way. Yeah. And it's like, for Sony, which has like a lot of specialized electronics sometimes, like this, it seemed like I kind of got the idea. Oh, what I hope it is it's an experiment leading towards an eventual handheld entry again. Like, you know, maybe this is the Wii U before the Switch, you know, is like, is Sony going to do this and then do something that can stream and also play games? Because that would make a lot of sense. Everything's Steam Deckifying and the handle landscape is picking up. So maybe it's a foot in the door.
I, I also have to wonder, like, maybe there's a target audience or market for this that we're not aware of or culturally paying attention to, because maybe in, like, some countries or whatever it is where 5G might be really good, or Wi-Fi in dorms.
I mean, the country would be Japan, maybe.
Exactly, know? Right. Yeah. That's where my mind went to. But also maybe you're in some kind of communal living situation.
The houses aren't big. Is the thing. Like,
right. Where like your PS5 sits in your apartment, but you go to the lounge in the building to, I don't know, meet other people and play at the same time. Not maybe necessarily against each other or with each other, but
could be something like that.
Right. You sit there and yeah, I don't know.
What's funny, Scott, is that you suggested like, oh, maybe this could be Sony's foothold into a gaming system that can also stream stuff remotely. And I think what made me really angry is that Sony has been doing this forever. You could remote play from your PlayStation 4. To the
Vita. Any Sony phone, right?
Any phone, really. Like, hey, I had to like remind people. True. I was talking to our videographer who has a PlayStation 5. I was like, oh, this would be cool. I was like, dude, you can go download the PlayStation Remote app right now on your phone, on your computer. If you have a Google TV, I believe, or the Android TV platform has the PlayStation Remote app, download that app, connect, pair your you know, PlayStation 5 controller, and you could do the same thing without spending $200 on this thing. So Sony has like the infrastructure, and they've been doing this for a while. They have had handhelds before. This just seems like a really weird, like, yeah, let's do what everybody else is doing, kind of, except we've learned no lessons from the Steam Deck or the Switch, basically, because it turns out people do want to play games portably, but also they want to do that sometimes offline. You know, they want to do that not just streaming from a box, whereas the Switch and the Steam Deck can also stream games occasionally. There are some AAA games that can stream to Switch. The Steam Deck can stream from online services and also your own home gaming computer, which is kind of a cool thing. That's a feature I use sometimes to get Elden Ring to look a lot better than it does locally on the Steam Deck. So this is a thing people are exploring, but it's streaming plus offline play, right?
Well, backing all the way up to the PSVR 2, it's been a year of unusual tech decisions for Sony. Because, you know, it's like, PSVR 2, great tethered VR headset, but tethered and not backwards compatible with the older PSVR games. And, you know, when is it ever maybe going to be standalone or maybe streaming?
$550, yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, like the Quest 3 can do, you know, AirLink and can do wireless streaming to a PC. Sony didn't do that. Now, this is a wireless device, but it doesn't have the ability to hold the other games. So there's two products to me that made certain decisions and then moved away from other decisions in the landscape. So it feels like a trend of this year that you're like, products that are moving in directions I like, but not making all the decisions that I would think that they would do.
I think Sony is a baffling company, is the thing. Like, I wrote an editorial, I think it was last year or the year before. I was like, will Sony ever, like, reclaim its consumer electronics, like, throne? Will ever be the king again? And I will tell you, folks, like, Sony reps called me the next day. I was like, what the hell is this? And I was like, well, I said the truth. I said, like, you are basically existing on PlayStation and Spider-Man movies right now. And wherever you are in consumer electronics is just kind of like, it's kind of wild because they do crazy products. I reviewed, I previewed the Nex speakers they released several years ago. It was the dumbest thing in the world. It required like a dock that you had to plug in a computer or a TV into. It didn't support Bluetooth. They are just like filled with questionable decisions. Oh, by the way, this thing, the PlayStation Portal, does not support Bluetooth. So
there's also that
you can buy the PlayStation Pulse Explore earbuds to pair with it. Those are another $200. Thanks, Sony. This feels like the memory stick days, right? It feels like when you had to buy Sony memory cards because they didn't want to support SD cards. It almost feels like that is a purposeful limitation, I'd say.
It has the headphone jack nestled all the way underneath, and along with the charger. It's like the hidden ports of the Portal. You know, the Sony handheld decisions drive me crazy. And then also on a totally tangential, but as of the week of handheld gaming, Microsoft's handheld decisions are driving me crazy. Mm-hmm. And it makes me feel like I go, what is it about these companies that have already been near or in these spaces that are not seeing the landscape and moving to optimize for it in their ways, you know? And I'm going to full legion go into that, even though Microsoft is not directly involved in it, but they should be.
They should be. Microsoft should be involved in a lot more things, Scott. And meanwhile, I'm getting more and more press releases about, oh, we have a new AI copilot for everything, literally everything. I'm also baffled by what Microsoft is leaning into this year as well. So you're testing a whole bunch of different things. Any initial thoughts on the Legion Go, Scott? Which is a Windows device. It's a Windows handheld.
Yeah, it's driving me crazy, but I appreciate it. So that's how I feel. It is a total under the hood type of a project device for me. Like, this is like, if somebody's into Windows, it's totally taking me out of my comfort zone and it makes me feel like an idiot. And I feel embarrassed by that. But I also go, okay, so I'm admitting it. And, but also it's a combination of things. It's one, not being a PC gamer who optimizes graphics normally for PC games, but also there's a lot of quirks on Legion Go anyhow. Like, sometimes the controller won't work, or sometimes it says it won't run on this driver.
That sounds like a Lenovo device to me, Scott. So
yeah. I had to hunt down the Lenovo drivers on the website, which apparently, like, through looking at a subreddit, like, didn't have the latest drivers, or maybe it did. And then I was like, I went to the site and downloaded. Should I have done that? Or running an EXE? I think it's okay. Okay, we're running it.
This is the downside of portable PC gaming, by the way, is that it's a PC, right? You have to
yes,
do PC
it's a PC.
Stuff.
It is a full PC. That'll make some people incredibly excited. But then I go, okay, Microsoft, which makes the Xbox and has Game Pass, has a vector for this to become easy, fun, instant, simple interface, and then it is not enabling that in any way that I can perceive to create a Steam Deck-like console environment for Windows handhelds. And
or even working with Valve to just be like, hey, what can we do to get that Game Pass app on the Steam Deck or something, you know?
Like, I go back to Steam Deck and I go, okay, this is a complete in the middle between Switch and PC, where it's like, you can get under the hood with it, but it's a totally comforting console environment. But the Legion Go has so many weird pieces that I go, I mean, the screen's great. The fact that it can run multiple game stores is really cool. The detachable controllers and the kickstand. But also, there are probably going to be a lot more of these now. The industry is opening up to handheld PC gaming. So it's like, I would expect more come CES and elsewhere. You know, where's Razer in this picture? And like,
they announced something a while ago, right? Razer? I feel like there was.
Yeah, well, they have like the Edge phone one now, but then there used to be the Edge PC one that I looked at in 2013. And I was like, I'm like, they introduced this space ahead of the Switch. So I'm like, I think it's all going to come back around, but you need Microsoft in the middle there, along with Valve, to not be like, where's the Xbox handheld? Or where's, like, you know, just like get involved. And then not to get away from Sony, but it's like, then Sony as a super hardware company, like, if you're going to have a handheld, you got to make it and make the games for it and bridge that. And like, do they want to support that? But they should.
Every time Sony has done a handheld, they like sort of like don't give it enough support, right? Like the Vita was, I think, fantastic. That thing shipped with OLED in 2012, 2013, like a beautiful OLED screen. I remember playing like 100 hours of Persona 4 Golden on that, and it was, I loved it. But yeah, Sony is just too afraid, I feel like, to take those risks when it comes to handheld sometimes. Speaking of a Microsoft console, Scott, do we all remember the Logitech G Cloud handheld gaming console, which sold for $350? It's actually still on sale. $350, all it does is stream, but it does have a big Game Pass Xbox Cloud gaming app front and center. So that's something.
Yeah, and it's that weird, like, it's like Apple experimenting in phones with the rocker before the iPhone. It's like,
oh, that rocker was so cute. I did like the rocker. It looks so cool.
Make the move, Microsoft. Like, Steam Deck, like, I'm just surprised because the Switch seems, they make the Switch look so ahead of its time when the Switch is actually lagging in some tech. But like the idea of it now, like, they did that. It's been existing for 6 years. This is like Nintendo did this. Like,
with a 2017 era NVIDIA processor, right? Like, that, and we're still running that. Tears of the Kingdom is running on that.
Why can't you do this? I've been thinking this since 2018 that there would be more of these things. And now it seems like we're finally getting into handhelds kind of exploding. Mm-hmm. But it also feels like they need a lot of work to, I mean, the Steam Deck is really getting great. I still get pissed that I can't run Madden on it because of the anti-cheat thing. Like, it won't run the mini authorization app. So again, another device I can't play. Yeah. I don't know why I care about Madden because I'm a depressed Jets fan, but like, so I need ways to vent, but you can't play it on Steam Deck. You can I tried on Legion Go and it was weirdly slow and terrible. I don't know if that's EA or Lenovo or I screwed up, but you can do it on Portal.
It plays Madden. That's the headline, right? It play Madden. Nothing else really does. I would say takeaways for listeners, by the way, if you were looking at any of these devices, I would sit tight. I would not invest in the Asus one. I would not invest in this Lenovo one. Like, the Steam Deck does seem like the best, especially now that they have the OLED revision. Like, that mid-range Steam Deck is a really good deal with more storage and a really nice screen. So that is like the one to jump on. Or just wait and see what the Switch follow-up is next year. I bought a Switch OLED. I forget if it was earlier this year or it was like a couple months before Tears of the Kingdom. And I also really enjoy that too. Like, I know how old that hardware is, but it feels so good. That OLED is so good. So that is my like fanboy pick. I'll put that down.
Yeah, I still love the Switch. I mean, obviously I cover a lot of Switch games, but like, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's never going to run the bleeding edge like other third-party games, but like what Nintendo does, they're fantastic.
And indies, like indie, we have had so many great indies that don't need all that horsepower. So Sherlyn, like, is this landscape at all any more clear for you now, or is it just getting more confusing?
No, it just sounds like there's still a lot of things to figure out. It still seems like companies are struggling to give us the perfect handheld. Even if the Switch is really great, it's not perfect by any means. It sounds like the Steam Deck OLED is also probably, like, that we talked about last episode, I think, is like one of the strongest ones out there. But there's a lot of interest. I have people like hitting me up going like, Lenovo Legion Go or ROG Ally or all of these different like Ioneer ones. Like, what's the better? I'm like, I think they all come with their own problems.
They're all
I think,
like, yeah, do you want to be diving into the Windows interface on an 8-inch screen? Then good luck.
And yeah, to kind of parallel it with like something I'm a lot more familiar with, it feels like an evergreen issue, whether depending on the product category or regardless of the product category, of software not really meeting. Like, you know, hardware might be there on some, you know, cases like Android tablets. You'll never find a good like 2-in-1 Android tablet because the software just isn't good enough for it. I feel like
Google
in the same
doesn't
way,
care enough. Yeah.
Right. But it feels like in the same way, Windows PCs just can't really be played very well on handheld controller. Like, that's why the third party makers can't really get them there.
This happened too quickly for Microsoft. Microsoft does not move in like 2 or 3 year increments. Right. Microsoft is this is going to happen in 5 years. You know, they invested in OpenAI a long time ago, which is what led to Bing Chat. So Microsoft can't move fast, unfortunately. Right.
Right. So it just feels like an emblematic problem, like everywhere in every product category you're looking at, unless it's someone that owns both the hardware and software the way Apple does. And in this case, Microsoft could, like you said, step in because they have the software, but they don't seem to really feel comfortable stepping in with the hardware side.
Or like what Valve's doing. Yeah, it's like, I mean, what's interesting is that, you know, like I like that Valve has games that are, you know, these run on Steam Deck. We've verified them. Right. And then like, you know, obviously an iPhone is going to run things that run on iPhone. Switch has got Switch optimized things. But like the Legion Go, I have no idea if a game is meant to be running on the Legion Go. And neither does the game.
Exactly.
The game doesn't know. The game, tell me. So I'm finding all sorts of quirks, problems. I mean, even things like Ratchet and Clank on Steam crashed on Legion Go, plays on Steam Deck. I don't know why. It just said something about the graphics and the video memory.
It's PC gaming. Those are the joys of PC gaming. I don't know why this is not working. It was working yesterday. Yeah.
So Legion Go is like this like troubleshooting game. And it's like early days. I'm sure there'll be updates, but like you're going to have to be a person who likes that's again, it's like the car propped up on the cinder blocks. Like you're going to want to get under the hood with this one. It's a tinkerer console or device. I don't even know if I call it a console. It's more of a Windows
handheld. Yeah.
Yeah. And it doesn't feel console in the sense of the comforting. They have the Legion software, but it's like a shell. It's like a launcher. You know, that's why it drives me
crazy. They're all Asus says the same thing. They're all Band-Aids on top of Windows. And the problem is Windows ultimately. So we shall see. Anyway, Scott, final thoughts on the PlayStation Portal. I know like it sounded like you did like some of it, but how are you feeling at this point?
I do. Well, again, like coming back from the whole week as I bounced between Portal, Steam Deck, Legion Go towards the end of the week, back to Portal. I mean, I appreciate what the Portal has actually compared to Legion Go, and I don't mean it like I'm sorry, Lenovo, but you know, in the sense that it just works. It's a simple just work device. And you know, some people are going to be like, but I already have that thing that just works. But at least it does that. When your internet is functioning, and I have like not great internet, but at least it works. And
do you live in a giant mansion, Scott?
So I live live in a house, but not a giant mansion. But I live in Fancy Town in a narrow house that does have 3 floors. So it's like but that sounds pretty fancy. And it's the upstairs attic that has the PlayStation, and then I'm going to go downstairs. And so I do, it's nice to play downstairs, but I have like 100 megabit Wi-Fi, you know, on a, like an old Verizon router with Eero, like not the Wi-Fi 6 version. So it's all like, it works on that. I just don't want, it's like cheap internet. So I don't want to like update it. Mm-hmm. This is my whole story about my internet. Fair. But that's, so at least it does work. And for the portal, it's a non-justifiable device unless I feel like it's totally like a treat to a PlayStation 5 owner who's like, mm-hmm. I buy everything PlayStation and I only want to play my PlayStation downstairs. I will pay the $200.
They will do it. Yeah. The person with the Sony Christmas sweater and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. And I go, it's not a crazy product for that because it does as long as you know exactly what it is doing. Mm-hmm. I actually thought the screen crispness was really nice. Mm. The frame rate was not so nice, but like the detail for the size of the screen, because I often find on a phone or even on the Steam Deck on the 720p, making out some of the text. It's not just my eyesight. It's the resolution of the size of the text.
And this is a 1080p screen on the portal, so that's nice.
1080p, 8-inch. And so you can read all those little things, and I appreciate that. That's a small note.
It's worth noting. I thought the screen was just fine. I wish it just worked. That could have been my headline. I wish it just worked, because I just ran into so many issues where I was like, I don't know if I can trust this thing, even when the streaming does work nicely, you know? So, you know what, folks? Let us know what you think. Are you a PlayStation 5 owner? Do you want the PlayStation Portal, or do you want to wait till it's inevitably much, much cheaper, which I think it will be within a year? What the hell is Sony thinking? Let us know. podcastengadget.com. Scott, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Where can people find you online these days?
I don't even know. So I think you can find me on CNET. You can find me still on X. You can find me on Threads. Like, I need Threads friends, and
we're on threads, right?
But like my footprint on Threads is a microscopic little thing. So
same.
I'm trying to make my way, and I guess I have been on Blue Sky and Mastodon, but I've forgotten to. So
yeah, Mastodon's fun. Mastodon, if you want to nerd out with the tech geeks, it is.
It's just too many. I just want them all to cross post. That's where you can find me.
I would love that. Yeah.
Hopefully you can find me.
The next startup will be yet another. There were so many cross-posting social media, platforms back in the day. So that's going to happen again for sure. All right, Scott, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, let's move on to some other news. And speaking of Microsoft doing AI stuff, there was a bunch of news out of Microsoft Ignite this week, which is their big... I guess what is that? Is that their enterprise and cloud service? You know, it's the one where they talk to companies, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, they have so many events.
But this is their more, like, this is not always the news we look at, but there was some relevant stuff here. Microsoft announced it's rebranding Bing Chat, the Bing Chat AI, as Copilot. So now, Copilot, all the things. Bing Chat Enterprise, as well, is just going to be called Copilot. It's going to be part of the Microsoft 365 license for a lot of companies, still using, you know, GPT-4 and DALL-E 3, like all the other Copilot stuff. So they're just kind of formalizing what this thing's going to be called, and they're going all in on Copilot, baby. And Microsoft, there were rumors that Microsoft was building its own chips around AI stuff, too. They confirmed that they do have two chips that they have designed, the Azure Maia AI Accelerator and the Azure Cobalt CPU. So the Azure, that Cobalt CPU is going to be something you can, if you bought Azure server space or like actual computing stuff, you can, I guess, tap into that. And the Maia Accelerator is going to be something Microsoft is using for like Copilot. So to put into server racks to speed up Copilot processing. What do you think about this at this point, Trulin? Does it make sense?
Big yawn. I don't care anymore. Really, I don't care about all these.
I do.
Yeah. I can't.
I totally understand, Trulin, because we're working on end of year stories, and like I feel like as a preview to what is percolating in my mind right now, it's like I don't think Microsoft knows what the hell it's doing. Like I think this is so all the Copilot stuff just feels so desperate, right? Like Copilot, all the things, except you can't trust it.
I think Microsoft, you know, at the start of the year seemed like it was pulling ahead in this race, right? With the Bing AI launch reveal event that got Google scared enough to be like, Bart, Bart, Bart. But then now it seems like, yeah, we're looking at how much more thoughtful and how much more Google's expertise in this area has given it kind of the competitive edge over Microsoft. Microsoft is more like, we have all these software products, we're embedding all of this stuff in it, but because it's tapping OpenAI and not really having the expertise itself in-house, I think we're seeing the limits of its imagination. Whereas like Google has been working on, I'm sure secretly, so many more different
ways
to use
generative AI. Have you seen it actually announced? Because it sounds like you're assuming Google's. What is Google working on that is better than...
I mean, the fact that Google has been able to integrate generative AI into a Pixel phone, the fact that generative AI is coming out on a lot of different Google products, and Google also has a lot more products, I think, than Microsoft does in terms of like consumer facing.
More than Windows?
It is. How about Android? How about Search? How about, you know, Drive? How about Cloud? How about Chrome? The browser. I mean, there's a lot of different, like, I think it's probably also the fact that you cover Microsoft more and I cover Google more, and probably we both have our own biases coming into this.
But I'm generally wondering, like, is there a Bard? Like, yes, Bard is something you can access through Chrome, but is there any sort of like...
I mean, obviously, I'm not just talking about Bard. Bard is the chatbot version, and Bard is what Google announced in response to, you know, Microsoft going Bing AI event. But more like Google's AI smarts have always been further developed than I think Microsoft, at least if we're talking about pure assistant stuff. Like, I feel like Google has had more years of experience on that front than Microsoft, at least on AI. I will acknowledge that, like, Microsoft has a lot of cloud expertise and all of that infrastructure from Azure stuff. So you're not wrong, I think, in saying that Microsoft is a little directionless right now, maybe a little lost. And I think...
To what you're saying, I think you are right, Sherlyn, that Google maybe has a clearer sense of what it wants to do with AI. So they're a little more focused. And I think that is what Microsoft is lacking, right? I think the Copilot and everything, like, I don't, like, speaking of all the Copilot stuff, Microsoft is also officially announcing today that Copilot is coming to Windows 10. And that is an operating system that is going to not be, they're not going to officially support, you know, in a couple of years. But it's important enough to Microsoft to bring it to the old OS because a lot of people are still there. I see the use case, right? Like, I see the little Copilot icon in my taskbar. Yeah. I'm like, okay, I could ask it questions. I could put documents in it. I can ask it to summarize things. I have not really been doing that much. I have been using other things, tapping into large language models like Mac Whisper that I was talking about, where you could just drop in an audio file and it gives you a nice transcript. I don't think Copilot can fully do that yet with big files. So I'm just like, I wonder if Microsoft is building this thing and this like potential use case for a lot of people, like the way they built Windows 8 and was like, hey, everybody wants tablets, right? Everybody wants tablets in there with Windows, right? And nobody wanted it. I feel like they're kind of on the cusp of the same thing. Personally,
to your point, I think that maybe as writers, you and I haven't relied as much on generative AI to do our work for us, because you and I maybe are more like, this is our job. We love writing, want to write ourselves. Whereas, like, I know of people who have started relying more on things like ChatGPT to write up their essays, their research proposals, that sort of stuff. And, you know, all I can say is, if you're out there listening and you've turned to Copilot or ChatGPT or whatever it is you use so much more in your life right now, you probably have a different experience from us. But I think Copilot suffers from the similar, like, setup that every other generative AI does, which is that, are people going to use it? And if so, like, how much more useful is it that it's integrated into your OS? I think it's more useful for sure to be available through Windows.
Is it a toy, or is it actually like a functional, useful tool that you can... Is it a toy or is it a tool? Like, I think that is the ultimate thing. And I think Microsoft is pitching this as like Copilot. Sounds very fancy. It sounds like an actual thing that's going to help you get work done. I just don't know. So yeah, let us know, folks. Podcastingengadget.com. I am ambivalent about Microsoft's big AI push at this point. But you want to talk about something else, Sherlyn. There was a cool announcement around the Qi2 wireless standard.
There's a bunch of things going on. This week, Apple announced a different thing, but we learned earlier this year that there's a new standard of Qi, which is the wireless charging standard, coming out, a new generation of Qi, which is Qi2. And when it was announced earlier this year, I think as early as January, it was built using Apple's MagSafe technology. It would use the alignment of the coils and have some sort of magnetic attachment so that you could hold the devices in place. That alignment would be better and allow for, I guess, more secure and faster charging speeds potentially.
That was wild, by the way. Just the idea that that piece of Apple tech would be going to this open standard.
Open standard, basically. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. It is. It is wild to me. And so I think that that's why I was surprised. And this week, what was announced is that T2 is now available on all these latest products, including the iPhone 15 series, which is already there. So that is awesome if you already have a T2 compatible device, which means you were out there buying these things when they were selling. Like Anker, I believe, has some. I think Belkin and Mophie also had announced T2 products. So you could use all of these soon to have slightly faster charging rates with the wireless charging. It is replacing the original T charging standard, which is over 13 years old now. Holy crap. T2 offers support for 15 watt charging, which to be fair is still actually quite slow, but much faster than existing wireless charging. It will also have enhanced safety features to prevent device damage or battery life shortening, which is really good for long-term use. And it will have something called foreign object detection. And this interoperability is, you know, the fact that Apple is on board and Android, you know, it's an open standard. Android phones can use these like MagSafe. It means third-party companies, again, like Anker, Belkin, and Mophie, don't need to make a separate like MagSafe thing versus a T2 for Androids thing. One wireless charging device should be good for both Android and Apple devices. So that is really nice to see this week.
I just want to point out while we're on T2 that the standard itself looks cool, but the MagSafe stuff does really make a difference. Like, I don't know if you've been using any of those chargers, Sherlyn, but I got one of the Belkin ones that the MagSafe like wireless charger by my bedside to hold the phone in landscape mode, and that turns on the whole like nighttime mode on the iPhone 15.
Standby.
Yeah. Standby. But it is kind of nice just to be able to like, okay, I just like slap this thing on. I put it on my nightstand, yeah. And that's it. So there's no like fiddling. I'm like, can I get the cable? Can I get the cable in the port properly? I could just like slap it on. It's a big, it feels like the slap bracelets almost. Like it's a nice thunk that just gets on. It's like, okay, I'm secure. I can go to bed now.
I honestly, over time, this is one of the many little things I've come to like about Apple devices. I know. I'm still an Android person at heart.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I mean, on these little things like MagSafe, I have the same, I don't know if it's the exact same stand, but the iPhone 15 review units came with this Belkin wireless charging stand as well. And yes, being able to snap on, regardless of whether it's the 15 or the 15 Pro Max, it snaps on, it holds in place. You can turn it around without moving the magnet or like having to detach and reattach. And then the base also has a secondary like charging platform so you can charge multiple devices at once. It's, you know, it's very like handy and yeah, it's secure enough to hold it in place. And it would be nice if eventually this was an Android, you know, available thing too. Now, is it one of the things that I think will pull people away from Android into Apple? No, I don't think MagSafe is like that huge. I think, you know, Android still has the lead with things like reverse wireless charging and all of that stuff, which Apple's still doesn't offer. It does offer reverse charging, but through USB-C. But I wouldn't be surprised if Apple does eventually do that soon.
I can see that. Yeah. It's more. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
It seems like it's a year for Apple to like start adopting different charging standards, start opening up like charging things like with USB-C, with MagSafe coming to T2. It's actually pretty nice to see.
That's cool. Have we seen with T2, like there was talk early on with wireless, you know, power, and something that annoyed me was that it did feel really inefficient. It did feel like maybe we were wasting power because one of the nicest things, one of the most direct ways to ensure you were getting power to the device is to plug a cable into it. You know, it's not like going out into the world. Does T2 fix any of that? Or help with
I don't know that it does. I haven't looked at the standard closely enough. I haven't like read the like fine print type of thing. I will also note that like earlier this year or was it late last year, I tested the Tesla AirPower charging mat.
Yes. Yeah.
Just was like, it felt like a fire hazard sitting on my desk. So I was like, you know what?
Why is your desk warm localized in one location?
Well, or why is this charging pad going when I leave my phone on? It just felt very weird. So I was like, listen, I am more than happy to give these wireless charging people time to figure out how to deliver more power and do it more efficiently so you're not losing a lot of this power in the transfer. Yeah, like take your time. Don't put an exploding thing near me. You know, it's right by my face.
Totally makes sense. And talk about like another thing that I think Apple, like also Apple related, right? They announced that they're extending the emergency SOS satellite access for another year for existing iPhone 14 owners. This is funny because we still don't know the pricing. We don't know what this is going to cost when they're not covering the speed.
We read somewhere about like what exactly was the provider they were using, but I don't know that anyone can settle on sort of a pricing.
They never announced it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's mostly because like for Apple, the way they've marketed emergency SOS or think about it is that this is just something you use when you need it. So how do you really sell a plan, right? For something that you only use when you need. I will point out though that goddamn Google and Fitbit on the new Pixel Watch 2, this annoys me only because I hate Fitbit Premium so much. But like Fitbit Premium, when you subscribe to it, which is like, I was going to say Netflix prices, but Netflix prices just went up. It's about slightly cheaper than Netflix prices, right? Like $10 a month. You get all of that extra like coaching, meditative, whatever stuff with Fitbit Premium. But you also get through the Pixel Watch 2, basically emergency like cellular access. So if you're out of range of your own service provider, or you're using a LTE watch but you didn't actually pay for an LTE plan on that watch, you can actually with a Fitbit Premium subscription use it like a cellular communicator when you are like in need of emergency services or need to use that, like,
you know. So only if you have Fitbit Premium will Google save right. you when you're
exactly
stuck in
I was like really I
this just, is the problem this is the problem Right. Where it's like Apple has all these stories about like SOS saving people. Somebody's car flew off a cliff and they were able to use emergency SOS to get help. Batman appears, thanks to Apple. But if the story is you have this feature and this customer did not have it, was not subscribed to it, or like their subscription lapsed, right? Because their credit card changed or something, and that person died because of that. That's not a good story.
No, I wouldn't hear it too, because nobody would be marketing it or hyping up that story.
Nobody would be hyping it, but that would be the story that other like tech criticism sites will latch on. Immediately, like every Tesla fire is like a thing that is a free for all with some media sites. I think it's sort of like an ethical problem for Apple, right? Like right now, Apple is paying the bill for these SOS calls.
I want to point out that like in other related news this week, and this is probably evidence why Apple needs to stick to its current way of offering it for free. This week, we also learned that the Qualcomm's satellite texting plan is dead because phone makers are not interested.
Because they have to pay for it.
Yeah, because people had to pay. Yeah. And like, so in January at CES, we saw, and Qualcomm like, ooh, I probably spent a ton of money flying people out. It took everyone out into the middle of the desert in Nevada or something and announced Snapdragon Satellite, which was a project that was supposed to be the Android answer to emergency SOS via satellite.
Shout out to Chris Abel, who went to the desert for us.
And it would have allowed Android people to text over satellite. But now we are learning that Qualcomm is ending its partnership with Iridium, who was the satellite phone maker who they partnered with for this program. And Iridium said, said in a statement, which I love because I didn't think, I personally don't think that Qualcomm would have come out and been like as transparent as this. But yeah, Iridium said, although the pair had successfully developed and demonstrated the technology, smartphone makers, quote, have not included the technology in their devices. So it's kind of like, none of these companies want to do it. They weren't able to convince Samsung or OnePlus or whoever else Snapdragon or Qualcomm still works with. I think part of it is, lack of demonstrated desire for a feature like this that is like active, like someone would pay for it. The other part of it is Qualcomm would also like need to be in phones, right? And they're like, we've talked about this before, like more and more they're losing market share. Mobile chips tend to be made by companies themselves. So Google is not going to buy a Qualcomm chip anymore, I don't think. So if you can't get Samsung and Google on board, that's pretty much all of the Android phone market.
This, by the way, is like the microcosm of the trouble with Qualcomm, right? Or at least the Android market in general, right? It's like It's like trying to plan a vacation with a group of your friends, right? Apple can do whatever the hell it wants. Apple can take its money and go to Aruba. They don't have to like check in with anybody. Qualcomm has to tap into all the Android makers and be like, hey guys, where are we going this year? Where are we going to the beach? Are we going to the mountains? Everybody has to agree. And then if they don't agree, then that whole plan just kind of fizzles. So we've heard a lot of announcements of things from Qualcomm, Shirlin. Like, I feel like the super fast charging and stuff, like, was stuff we were hearing about for years before it actually showed up in phones. Qualcomm has to wait for their stuff to be implemented for it to actually be useful. Whereas Apple would just be like, I'm doing it because I own the hardware and the software stack, and I can force satellite companies to be like, we're going to implement this. And Apple also has the cash reserves just to pay for it until they don't need to. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think this is speaking to like Qualcomm's business model and other companies like MediaTek, but more Qualcomm than anyone else, because Qualcomm has long been in the business of like IPing a bunch of like new technologies for phones, right, through their chips. So you've got the, like you said, the fast charging. I can't remember offhand all of the other like things that Qualcomm patented that like it works with other companies to do. But as we're seeing people edge out Qualcomm, to your point, as their chip maker, we're seeing people like do all these things on their own as well. It's not going to, I really don't think it's going to work. We're also seeing like Qualcomm apparently told, well, reportedly, or actually seemed to have told CNBC that smartphone makers have, quote, indicated a preference towards standards-based solutions.
And which is good.
Okay. For satellite connectivity, which is good. But to put that in more transparent or other non-corporate speak, they're looking for a more open approach that doesn't need Qualcomm in between, right? And so
I don't think that actually exists, the open
there's approach none yet.
To satellite yeah. calling at this point. So that's a thing that needs to be invented. Like these companies would rather wait years, right?
Yes. Apparently Starlink is going to roll out its satellite SMS service next year. Satellite-powered voice and data functions may eventually come out too, directly through phones, so you don't need to have a Starlink terminal to be able to access that. So, like, there are other ways to it. And
instead of relying on Qualcomm, you can rely on an Elon Musk company. What can go wrong?
It just seems like a very tricky situation. I think a lot of people are interested in this emergency SOS feature, the way that, like, Apple put it out there, positioned it, but it seems like when it comes down to the nuts and bolts of like actually having satellite communications in your hands, people don't actually want to pay for it the way we are paying for Netflix, I guess. So
this is a damn shame. And it's one of those things where I'm also kind of paranoid, especially now that I'm a dad and I have like paranoid dad brain, Shirlin. I'm always thinking about how things can go wrong. Like if we're going on a trip, like what if the car breaks down in the middle of nowhere? How do I get help? And that is literally one thing that would keep me on an iPhone versus an Android, to be honest. Like the fact that sort of stuff is more easily accessible now. And I think maybe a lot of people are starting to feel that way. But I guess we'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. I get a little kick when I'm like stuck on the subway or the path or whatever. And I see the emergency SOS and then the satellite signal show up. And I'm like, wait, we got satellite underground? Like, cool. Yep, well. I don't know where I was one time, but I saw the satellite icon pop up. I was like, whoa, okay. But it was, yeah, pretty interesting. So speaking of Apple and like texting and all of that stuff, one of the biggest issues obviously with Apple and Android and messages is no Android phones can iMessage, right? And I think we've all been like wondering where the solution is or what the solution is. And as you know, are we going to wait for third parties to come in and make an app? I don't know, but nothing, the company that makes like transparent looking devices or transparent devices or phones or you know, headphones, this week announced something called the Nothing Chats, which is a messaging app that supports both RCS and iMessage. Now, it uses a unified messaging platform called Sunbird, which has been available in closed beta since the end of last year. Sunbird would allow users to access all of their chats, including iMessage, from one interface. So basically, Nothing, just use an already available platform to make a new app. And it's like, oh, use this to iMessage on our Android phone.
Do you know how Sunbird works, by the way, Shirlin?
Not quite. But I will point out that I am aware that Sunbird is apparently very sketchy. But go ahead.
It's sketchy in the way that they are working. They're using a workaround and that Apple like could close at any point. But from what I've read and what's in our piece is that let's see. Sunbird's, quote, patent and process for bringing iMessage to Android involves server farms of Mac minis that route a user's messages through to Apple. That can't last. That's not scalable. Are you what? This is again nothing. I hate the brand name, but also the Carl Pei revealed they have six figures worth of Nothing Phone 2 devices in North America, and they will surely support bringing iMessage to Android on those.
So, like, if a phone is what, like, say a phone is what, $900, let's round it up, $1,000, and they sold, let's say, six figures at the very lowest is $100,000. They've sold 100 phones.
It could be
in North America, Britain, and Europe. Okay, more than that. At least 100 phones are out there. All right.
This is just, North America, I mean, that's not many phones. That's not many phones. There is so much publicity for this thing that is not going to reach many users. Yeah.
I will say, I think it's worth noting that Nothing told Inverse that all iMessage content sent through chats is encrypted and that, quote, at no point can Sunbird access your messages or Apple ID. Nothing noted that it will delete a user's Apple ID credentials after 2 weeks of inactivity. This doesn't feel secure because you've got a third party in between. You've also...
Apple's going to kill this.
Probably going to find out a way to cut that workaround. It just feels uncomfortable, but it also feels like a good marketing thing for Nothing to jump on.
Literally all it is. Yeah.
Yeah. And that is iffy, but if you were considering the Nothing Chats app, or if you were, a Nothing phone owner, or if you're just learning about Sunbird and now curious about, curious about using it. Devendra said there is probably some kind of clock on how long this will work. And
this has all happened before and will happen again. Sherlyn, I was mentioning to you the story that is before your time, but when the Palm Pre was big and happening, there was a lot of news like, oh my God, Palm got integration with iTunes going. And everyone's excited about that. 1 week later, Apple kills the Palm, the Palm iTunes integration. Like, these things don't last. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like also kind of like how, when you used to be able to jailbreak your iPhone. I don't know. Every time
you can still jailbreak your iPhone.
But every time a new jailbreak method catches the attention of a lot of people, then it's cut again. Like, it just keeps getting shut down. So, I don't know. Wait,
I'm really wondering, first of all, Carl Pei was talking to everybody, didn't talk to us. So I do feel left out.
I'm sure Carl Pei spoke to us. I will say, I think Sam's out. We know the Nothing people pretty well. We just haven't, neither Sam nor I have both been like very around lately. So
yeah, you guys deserve a break too. It's just... Hey everyone, this is Devendra with a quick update. Shortly after we stopped recording, Apple announced that it would be officially supporting RCS, which is the iMessage-like standard that Android currently supports. It delivers things like higher quality images and videos. You'll also get read receipts and, features like that. Something that feels like modern texting. So no, this won't bring iMessage over to Android. That is a whole separate thing entirely. It will make it easier to communicate with people who are using Android. If an iPhone user sends an Android user a high quality video right now, that usually gets scaled down quite a bit for Android. So that's not fun. In a statement to 9to5 Mac, an Apple spokesperson said they believe the RCS profile will offer, quote, a better interoperability experience when compared to SMS or MMS. This will work alongside iMessage, which will continue to be the best and most secure messaging experience for Apple users, end quote. RCS doesn't support end-to-end encryption like iMessage, so Apple's certainly going to lean on the more secure thing. And SMS and MMS support will also stick around, if in case you're texting somebody who doesn't use an RCS carrier, or sometimes that feature just gets disabled, it's going to be around as a backup. The Nothing 2 phones iMessage feature certainly goes a little further, but it also seems even in more danger now if regular Android users can just text with nice RCS rich text stuff with iPhone users. There's less of a reason to hack iMessage into a platform. Anyway, check out Sherlyn's story about the Apple RCS move over on Engadget, and we'll definitely be talking about this more in the next few weeks. You also had something about WhatsApp, right, Sherlyn?
So, yeah, I mean, chat, like, talking about, like, all these encrypted messages or whatever, I don't know if WhatsApp is one of those apps that we kind of use as an imperfect mechanism to get people on Android and Apple talking to each other, I guess. I still say Telegram all the way, but if you're a WhatsApp user and if you've been backing up your chats to Google Drive, heads up, they will soon take up storage space that counts toward your Google Drive limit. So if you have the free 200 gigs or 100 gigs, and your WhatsApp chats are heavy on storage, like they take up a lot of storage space, especially if you're like in one of those group chats that like ridiculously sends videos, like 3 hour long videos for no reason, then yeah, maybe keep an eye out. Maybe don't download them. Maybe don't back up your media to Google Drive anymore.
References a 2018 deal, right? Like it was a deal between WhatsApp and Google to be like, hey, if you back up your chats here, won't count against your space. So it was sort of like free unlimited storage almost just for your WhatsApp chats.
Well, and to be fair, I mean, I think a chat transcription, the chat log alone, just the text, never really takes up that much space, right? At most, what is it? Like if you've, it's years and years of text only chats can go up to what? At most 500 megabytes? Like what are we, how much? Not even.
I used to actually, throughout college and the years after college, I used to use Trillion, which was a wonderful app for unifying AIM, ICQ, everything all at once. I had like maybe a decade's worth of text logs, Trillion. I think it was maybe 50 megabytes because it was just all text. But
yeah,
your WhatsApp chats has media, it has video, can have photos. Right. So yeah.
So, as a person, I back up to Drive some of my chats. And it's like I look at the collection of pictures and like, I send a lot of pictures as well. And yeah, it does take up a lot of space, especially if you send a lot of pictures and memes to each other. So just be aware if you're, I mean, I'm on a like big plan storage wise, so I'm not too worried, but, if you're on the free plan, this is going to be something in December that you want to start taking notice of because, that's when it will start rolling out to WhatsApp beta users. And then finally, there's a bunch of Google news as well this week related, I guess. We were talking about Google Drive. YouTube. This one seems to have excited you a bit more than I, Devendra. YouTube's rolling out the high bitrate 1080p to premium subscribers, and it added some new AI features. Does that matter to you?
I mean, so high bitrate 1080p was something they've recently started testing, and it's really useful for stuff like game streams and maybe 60 FPS streams where you just want like the clearest content available. So maybe you care less about 4K, right? You care less about the resolution, just more about like how clear the frame looks. So yeah, it's a cool feature. It's going to be rolling out to what? Android, the web, smart TVs, not just iOS. So, but this is for premium subscribers. And we've talked about this before. I do think YouTube Premium is totally worth it because the ads have gotten so bad. The ability to just
ad blocker
breeze
is gone.
Through, ad blocker is gone. The ability to breeze through YouTube and just like watch whatever you want, like be a king among a god among streaming media, for $15 a month or however much it is now, it's totally worth it for me because I spend so much time online and we watch stuff on the TV too on YouTube. So this is a cool feature. Premium subscribers are also getting like AI generated summaries of comment sections. So that's kind of cool as well. Like, are you more sold on this yet? I forget if you're a premium sub or Sherlyn.
I am an aspirational premium subscriber because I feel like I should. I hate the ads, but I've also just like stopped watching YouTube as much just because of that, because I'm salty and I don't want to watch it. And I'm like, yeah. But, you know, it's interesting to see. I guess it's a good thing because you're paying more money, you should get more than just,
it should look better, you know. It's yeah, 2023 exactly. YouTube was founded almost 20 years ago, so yeah, we should make our 1080p content look better, you know. I feel like that just seems fair, but this should also be something coming down to everybody, not just premium users, to be honest. So it's like one of those things. We saw a story, Sherlyn, that I know you were excited about because you just really want to get Elmo.
It wasn't just me. It was everyone on our team that was around at that time. Everyone was pretty excited about the fact that this week, Sesame Street now is available. Or Sesame Street characters are now available on Cameo, which is the service where you can pay for a celebrity or like famous person to send you a personalized video message.
I've done Cameos. It's great. It's a great service.
Yeah, it's a great gift.
The company seems like a mess. Yeah.
Yeah, you can write scripts for them to say, I guess. So in this case, though, these are AI-powered character video. So it's not the Muppet. It's not the character actor using the actual Muppet. This is a cartoon. And they're, you know, you can pay $25 for each video message featuring Elmo or Cookie Monster. They can do things like count to your kid's age or rattle off words that start with the same letter as your child's name. So, for example, my name's Sherlyn. They can say cheese, cake, cupcake.
I think the AI will see your name and be like, I don't, does not compute. I don't know.
That is so
sad.
It's going
to be the same thing. I do wonder, so these are AI voices, but these AI voices are surely trained on all the like live action performers who've played these characters. They'd want it to sound like the character. So this is an instance where I'm pretty sure those actors are not going to get anything out of this. So
true.
It's another one of those weird.
It's only $25 a video. I'm sure they don't make enough money. Well, it depends. Maybe they'll get enough money. I don't know.
And I believe it's a nonprofit thing. Like Sesame Street is a really, I like the company. But it just seems like this is another thing where are you being fair to your performers here? Or should these things be going through the performers instead? It's a cool use of AI, but these characters, right? It's not like these characters just came out of nowhere, right? Like a human performer had to sit and think about how to voice how to give it a personality. And now the AI is going to like look at that and be like, okay, I could do that. I'm going to make money for the company rather than, you know, the person who's helping. So I don't know. It's one of those things. Are you going to do this for any young family, Sherlyn, or friends?
Screw them. No. I don't know. I don't know anyone that in my life.
You know Sam's Kid. You can get one for Sam's Kid.
Yeah, but I don't think Sam's Kid likes the Sesame Street characters just yet. Oh, and I think also maybe
you
Sam
guys are
can get
failing
it for
them.
Sam's Kid.
Come on.
Well, I think Sam. No. Sam's Kid watches other things. I'll leave it to Sam to decide like what, you know, to disclose about his kid or like what he wants to show his kid. But like,
yeah.
It's not something that I would do because I don't know the kids in my life that well. But I also
Sherlyn does not
say,
know children. It's okay.
Not at the moment, or who knows. I will say I have been thinking about holiday shopping and gifts, right? Other gifts that I can buy people. Like that's the thing. Like when I want to buy a gift for a kid in my life, I'm not necessarily thinking a video message because I feel like that's a very personal thing to give. You'd sit there and show it to them and watch their reaction, and then they forget about it, right? As a fun aunt.
No, they will watch it a million times over and over.
Yeah, and I'm not there with them to show it to them at bedtime when they want. I mean, I can send it to the parent probably, but I would like to be, you know, there. So eventually, maybe if I have a kid that lives with me, I'll do that. But anyway, so I'm out there shopping, and like I'm the fun aunt, and I got to find the fun aunt gifts. So I'm out there looking for, I don't know, one of the kids in my life likes fart machines. So I got to go look for a new fart machine this year and other things. But
what happened
to the
old one?
No, she just collects them every year. She's got a huge collection of fart machines. She's a weirdo.
I feel like you're a bad influence here, Sherlyn.
I'm a good influence. What are you talking about? But yeah, Black Friday is coming up. I'm very excited. I've got a lot of stuff in my carts to buy. I usually get my, like, this is one of my annual stock ups where I get all my home goods, my bathing, my toiletry supplies and all of that stuff. I just stock up every year. And my fart machines. Anything you're keeping an eye on for Black Friday, Devendra?
I don't know. At this point, I'm just as it's so tiring. We did have a deal on Engadget, so keep an eye out on the stuff we were promoting, folks. But we did post something about the Breville Smart Oven Air Fryer Pro. I do like the Breville Smart Oven. We got one a couple of years ago when it was on sale, and I was thinking to myself, what would I use a toaster oven for? Flash forward a couple of years, everything. Use it for everything.
Yes.
I can bake. I could do toast. I could do bagels. I could roast a whole chicken in there without heating up my entire oven. It is so fast. It's so useful. It's great with kids because if I need to make French fries, I'm always time constrained in terms of how long I have to cook things. So toaster oven is super useful. I can cook a whole dinner basically in 30 minutes, you know, or get French fries ready. So we're looking at this one because it has the air fryer features. It's a little bigger, maybe more useful. I'd recommend it to everybody if you have to prepare meals and stuff. Any toaster oven is good, but I really like the Breville Smart Ovens. Let's talk about some things from Around Engadget, specifically one story, Sherlyn, you want to highlight.
Yes.
We did a feature, a video feature on how the MTA's MetroCard vending machine became a New York design icon by one of our video shooters, Joel Chakotu. This is a cool thing because I like these vending machines.
So, Joel Chakotu came to our team, and I don't know if they already had like the idea or like somehow just chanced upon this reporting opportunity. But this has been months and months in the works. I remember accompanying Joel and our video team to go to one of the interviews with the person or the team that designed the original New York City subway MetroCard vending machine. If you've ever been here to New York City, I mean, we know the subway card is iconic. We know the subway is iconic.
And the subway card is still relatively new to a lot of people, right? Because when my wife was growing up in New York, it was tokens, right? I'm sure producer Ben could talk about that too. There were coins.
There's a lot of different like iconic parts of New York City, I'm sure. But like, and to me, part of that fabric of what makes New York so like recognizable and the subway system so iconic is the vending machine. I mean, I learned from that interview from being there how and why the designers came up with that, all the different bright colors, like, you know, why is the red this part? Why is the yellow that part? Why is the green that part? Why did they use such big, bright colors? And they had to design for simplicity, ease of use. But all of that is like how the subway card replaced the token system, right? All of that is now being replaced by a more modern method of the OMNY machine, which is to tap in, tap out, contactless, non-swipe payment. And I don't know if you do this, Devendra, but I'm one of those like New Yorkers who like, I take pride in how well I was able to swipe in of the turnstiles. Like, yeah, you have to, like, they were so finicky.
Yeah, you have to learn. Like, one thing, when you move to New York, like, it will take you a couple months to learn the swipe. And if you're in a bad swipe run and that line
starts to line up
behind you and everyone gets more and more frustrated, like, yeah, learning to swipe is an art. And we are losing it now thanks to contactless stuff. I don't know.
Yes.
And cards. Yeah.
Exactly. So if you have any sort of fondness at all for the New York City MetroCard and the vending machine and the system altogether, and you want to learn a bit more about how those machines came to be, the video on Engadget's YouTube channel called How the MTA's Vending Machine Became a New York Design Icon is a very, probably a very meaningful one to watch. It's very insightful for me. And I think a great project by our video team. We want to make more feature videos on interesting things like that. So let us know how you think, obviously, and leave a nice comment if you have time.
It's a cute, fun thing. I also know, like, this is something other publications have started doing too, like little tidbits of facts that you find in YouTube. This is why I like just sitting and watching YouTube, Sherlyn. Like, it's just stuff like, I could travel the world. I could learn about this MTA vending machine, which has been a big part of my life. Yeah. Let's move on to what we're working on. I'm actually trying not to work on much because I'm going to be off for the next 2 weeks. Sherlyn, what are you working on?
I mean, yeah, speaking of your being off, you know, I'm also not going to be around next week, so we won't have an episode of this podcast, right?
It's
next week
for Thanksgiving. Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, I have like continued to be working on editing things. I'm working on editing on a guide right now. And I need to not let administrative things get me down. I need to stay on top of those things, basically.
so many things. I mean, listen, we're just past picking your health insurance time. It's all the stuff coming all at once of the parts of being adult. Let's move on to pop culture picks. What are the fun things keeping you happy this week, Sherlyn?
I've been wanting to watch this for a while. I finally got around to doing it. I think in the last few days, I don't know how you feel about these. I love the Agatha Christie Hercule Poirot series of films.
I like the new one.
Yeah. Exactly. So I watched the new one, The Haunting in Venice. It has Michelle Yeoh in it. It's got, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Kenneth
Branagh.
Okay, as Hercule Poirot. But it's also got Tina Fey as a somewhat Agatha Christie-like authoress.
She is in every murder mystery now because she's also in Only Murders in the Building, which is great. And you should watch, Sherlyn, if you haven't.
I have been watching Only Murders in the Building. She's been great. And I mean, I liked her in season one a lot. I like Amy Schumer was in it too, one season. I don't know. They have great guest stars in that series. It's called Haunting in Venice. I believe that's the title of it. So that's one of the movies I saw recently, but it's not super new. I did also get a chance to watch recently Killers of the Flower Moon. Have you seen that, Devendra?
I mean, of course. It's one of the biggest movies of the year.
3.5 hours. Are you
very
kidding?
Long. Another Jesus. Magnum opus by Martin Scorsese. But I freaking loved good. It. What did you think?
It was really good. It was really good. I really enjoyed it. I thought Lily Gladstone was incredible. I didn't know this part of American history. I never knew about this.
Most
this
people
case
don't.
Of, these murders. It was very nice to see Robert De Niro in something again, and along with Leonardo DiCaprio, I guess. I'm in awe of all the acting, of the pacing of this movie. Even though it was like a very long movie, it never really felt like a drag. I got very invested in the storyline. It's one of those movies where after you like watch it, you go and dig deep into like what really happened. And I don't know, Devendra, you could probably explain better than I can what's
going on.
Turns
out America's pretty messed up, folks.
Yeah.
Turns
out, you guys say
yeah.
Osage? Osage?
Osage. Osage.
Osage. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's a great movie. And also, I will tell you, folks, like this movie, I was so invested in it. Like this movie made me cry by the end because it does make you feel like this woman's life is such a tragedy. And you know, things end in such a way where it's just like, man, it's really like, it's not just like, you know, racists who want to steal their money. It is the entire structure of our government
yes.
that enabled this stuff, too. It is, you know, law enforcement not caring, its presence not caring. It is the fact that this country was founded on stealing land from natives. And it turned out a bunch of natives ended up on land that had a lot of oil and they got rich. And then somehow a certain group of Americans found ways to take advantage of that, too. So it just I found it really affecting and really you could draw a lot of parallels to what's happening today. Yeah.
Yeah. I was so angry the whole time watching this movie because I don't know why I related so much to Lily Gladstone's character and all of the women of color in the show, because it was actively white men who would marry, I believe, Native American women.
For their property,
for their
basically, and for
property,
their
property, for their money, for their resources, for their oil rights. And as a woman of color who dates a lot of white men, I was like, oh, okay. This is
a big warning sign. That's a deal breaker, ladies.
This is something I already knew.
Do you have an oil fortune?
I was already aware of.
Watch out for any
I have a non-oil fortune.
Yeah.
So it was
okay.
Very interesting
breaking
to watch.
On the Gadget podcast. Okay.
I have a non-fortune. It was very, very, like, for me, I resonated with it a lot, even though it's mm-hmm. really not about my history or my life
it's so affecting.
My country's history.
Lily Gladstone, I hope, is going to be up for all the awards next year because she does so much without really saying a word sometimes. It's all in her eyes and her face and the way she even judges DiCaprio's character. Anyway, great movie. See it in theaters if you can. It's going to be on, you know, it's going to be on Apple TV Plus in December. Yet another great move by Apple, too, to give Scorsese a ton of money to make this thing. Because this movie, I think, costs like over $300 million. So the fact that such an epic has the budget behind it.
Can I just say it didn't look like it cost that much? Because there's not a lot of CGI in this movie. It's just a lot of good acting.
I mean, it's big sets. Big sets doing
it's
historical
huge sets.
Stuff takes
yeah,
time.
Yeah, for sure.
But
yeah.
Anyway, good recommendation, Sherlyn. I'm glad you got to check those out. I have something for you, actually, that I think you will enjoy. It is a podcast called Ghost Story over at Wondery. And this is a real-life, supposedly true podcast. Journalist Tristan Redman says he doesn't believe in ghosts, but he grew up in a home in London, and he noticed weird things were happening in his bedroom. Like specifically, a vase he would put down would change locations every morning. You know, he would put it on the floor and it would end up on his nightstand or something. And he thought his sister was making fun of him. He just kind of moved on from there. But when like maybe like 10 or 20 years later, he started talking to people back in the neighborhood. He was hearing about people who also lived in that house. One family, their daughter saw the bed rattle, like under her, and saw impressions of somebody sleeping in the bed next to her. One family reported seeing a faceless woman in the room. These are all like people independent of each other having stories about things happening within this building. So I found that that's kind of cool. And this journalist says he's not like a big ghost hunter or something. He says he's a non-believer. But then it also turns out that his wife grew up in the building next door, and he did not know that at the time. They met in college, but it turns out his wife lived nearby. His wife's great grandmother was murdered in that house almost 100 years ago. So there's like a lot of things being tied together here. It's like, okay, it turns into a murder mystery, but it also turns into like a real life haunting mystery. I think it's really good. I think it's really well done. I don't know. Have we talked about the paranormal on the show before, Sherlyn? But, you know, I'm a very rational, realist guy, but I have like a fraction open to be like, I understand that science does not capture everything because so much of what we learn, like we don't understand quantum physics. Not really. There's so many things we don't fully understand. Like I leave the door open for us to like come to some sort of understanding or like for some things to be possible outside of scientific, you know.
I mean, that's why I love science fiction and horror and paranormal.
Exactly. That's why I love The X-Files. But anyway, this really does, it's just spooky in a way to hear people like tell the same story of things happening in this building or near this building and people saying like, oh yeah, I'm never going to go to that third floor again because a lot of stuff happened there. Anyway, I think this is a very good podcast. It's really well produced. His wife's family are also the Danceys. So actor Hugh Dancy, who's on shows.
Oh,
he's on Downton Abbey.
We love Hugh Dancy. Yeah.
He's on that. He was
Ella Enchanted, I believe.
Ella Enchanted. He was the detective in Hannibal as well, which is where I know him from. So Hugh Dancy is a part of his family because his wife's family is like a bunch of overachievers. And it really all comes down to this mystery surrounding her.
Married to Claire Danes.
Yes. I mean, what a couple. But yeah, so his wife's family is this whole like just like English, overeducated, you know, very, very like smart family. So Hugh Dancy does some readings of his great-grandfather too, who sort of becomes a suspect in this case in a weird way. So it's really fascinating. It has a good mixture of spooky stuff and true crime stuff and really well-produced audio storytelling too. So I think it's really well done. I'm not a big fan of like all the true crime podcasts, but I think this one is really cool. And if you listen to it at night in your earbuds, you will definitely start to feel a bit of creepiness out there. So check out Wondery's Ghost Story Podcast.
Well, that's it for the episode, everyone. Thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, at Devendra at Mastodon.social. I'm on Blue Sky as well. Do not ping me on Threads, for the love of God. Every time I go to Threads, I just keep seeing, I tell people not to, and yet they still do it. I don't know. Anyway, and you can also find me at the Filmcast, talking about movies at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me any ideas for kid-appropriate fun aunt gifts, you can hit me up via email, cher@engadget.com, or on, I guess I'm still on X, but
you're
not
still
really.
On X.
And
not
I'm
the
on
fun
Threads.
X, you're on Elon Musk's X.
No, so, not yeah. Not X to see, no. I am on Threads at CHERLYNNSTAGRAM. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts.
I'm also going to be hosting This Week in Tech this week. I'm taking over for Leo Laporte, who I believe is on a tech-free retreat right now. So, I don't know. We've got some cool guests, so come take a listen. That's at twit.tv.